if you don't like Boston or don't like Boston sports, this is like solstice for you. This is like the worst day ever, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at Boston from outside, and obviously the Red Sox have won, what, 4 World Series now in the last 15 years. The Patriots have been a dynasty. The Bruins have a fairly recent cup, and they've been good, and the Celtics are the Celtics. I mean, it's, you know, you look at it from a city like, say, oh, I don't know, Toronto, and you say, well, where are our championships? So, yeah, it is tough. I mean, Boston people have been extraordinarily lucky over the last 15 or 20 years with, I would guess, about a dozen championships in the 4 sports, and that's really remarkable. But for the Blue Jays, I would imagine they'll be inside. Like, maybe some of them will be hanging out in the dugout watching a bit of it, but I would guess most of them would be in that cramped little visitor's clubhouse that you've been in as many times as I have. And then it's just go play ball. I don't think the Blue Jays have enough of their own issues to worry about that. I don't think they'll get all caught up in the ceremony today.
Dan, why are they... And I know if you had the answer, you'd. I know you'd have already given it to Charlie and to Guillermo. But why, top to bottom, are they scuffling the way they are offensively? Is, you know, like Kevin Barker might say they're just. That's just because they're not. There's a lot of players that are just kind of okay players. There's some guys that aren't really great players, and this may be them.
Yeah, I see three things. I think that's one part. But there are a lot of guys on this team who are just okay players and aren't going to be here in a year. There are a lot of guys on this team who are young and are either rookies or are in different roles, bigger roles than they were in last year. And I think the third thing is, and Charlie Montoyo said it, didn't pull any punches after Sunday's game in Cleveland. He said the approach is not good right now. And just in the games that I've watched, it's a lot of, I mean, I'm going to swing as hard as I can and hope that I can hit it. And I looked up some numbers this morning in terms of swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. Mm-hmm. The Blue Jays do it the fifth most often in baseball. The only part of that surprised me was it wasn't first, because it sure feels like it's first, mm-hmm. like they're swinging at pitches outside the strike zone a lot. And in terms of making contact on pitches outside the strike zone, they're the third worst in baseball. So they're doing something they're not very good at a lot. The idea is do the stuff you're good at a lot, do the stuff you're not good at as little as possible. But it feels like everybody's pressing, everybody's trying to hit a 5-run homer. You know, Drury doesn't look anything like the guy we saw in the spring. Gurriel doesn't look anything like the guy we saw last year. Jansen really hasn't gotten going yet. And it's you know, the bad stuff can be contagious just like the good stuff. I know this is going to sound like antiquated baseball strategy, but a base hit's good every now and again. It doesn't always have to be a home run. A base hit, send a runner to third. Just get some guys on the bases. Get people kind of fired up in the dugout. Start with line drives, and then hopefully that changes and they can hit the ball out of the ballpark. But they just got to get some guys on base early.
Yeah, Danny, I find Gurriel, you know, Danny Jansen, I and Buck Rogers, when he managed the Expos, we were talking about rookie catchers one day, and he said, you know what, I don't even look at a rookie catcher's offense the first year, because, you know, Buck was the former catcher. He said, I want the guy to handle the pitching staff. Obviously, you want the guy to contribute, but I'm not, if a rookie does a good job handling the pitching staff and his offense suffers, okay, well, we, you know, that's fine. That's his first year. I'll handle that from the catcher. So I'm willing to ride the development curve with Danny Jansen. But Dan, I got to see more from Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I really do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're not the only one. I mean, especially after what he did last year, I think we all kind of came into this year thinking, okay, we don't know exactly what position he's going to play. It looks like second base. We don't know how good he's going to be defensively. It looks like adequate. But we know he's going to swing the bat well, but he hasn't swung the bat well. 2-for-27, and he, more than anybody that I've seen, is just swinging from the heels. Like, just the wrong approach in the wrong situation. And it's odd to me because he's on a guaranteed major league contract. Like, it's not like he's fighting to get to that next level financially. And he had success, got whatever he got, 250 at-bats last year. He's a guy I thought would come in ready to go. Now, maybe the acquisition of Galvis that pushed him from an everyday guy to kind of a utility guy bothered him, but then the injury to Travis kind of put him back in like an everyday spot again for the most part. So I don't know what's going on, but I'm glad that Charlie Montoyo said what he did, and I'm sure they had a lot of soul searching on the plane Sunday and on the off day yesterday, and hopefully we'll see a better approach here at Fenway Park.
Dan, what if we don't? What do they do with Lourdes Gurriel?
Well, at some point, Vlad's coming up. By my math, at some point, somebody's going down.
Right.
Now, it can be one of a number of things. You know, they can outright Alan Hansen and risk losing him through waivers. They can send Urania down, or they can send Gurriel down. They could do any one of those three things. And I have no sense of what they're going to do. But when Guerrero comes up, we assume he will, by and large, play third base on an everyday basis, if not every day, close to it, which pushes Drury off third base. Drury's next best position is second base. Now, Drury's got a hit to really make this a conversation, and I think he will. But if Drury's going to play more second base, then where are you going to put Gurriel? I think we're going to see more Gurriel at first base. But right now, it wouldn't shock me if any of those three things happen whenever Vlad comes up. If Hansen's outrighted, Urania's optioned, or Gurriel sent down. And it's not about the wins and losses, but you can't have a guy just fighting it badly for weeks and weeks and weeks without sending him down to try to get his confidence back at some point.
Dan, before we shift focus a little bit to the NCAA men's, to that terrific final last night, I did want to ask you about Chris Davis, 0 for 47. I mean, people aren't laughing anymore. You know, I was following it in social media. There are a lot of players who are just, you know, enough. Like, players are aching for Chris Davis. Whatever you may think about that contract, I don't think anybody wants to see that. What? There's a lot of money and some years left in that deal. What happens with Chris Davis, Dan?
It's a great question. It's three more years after this one. So let's consider it four more years. I think he's making like $23 million a year. We're talking about $90 million still to come. How would you like to be? Now, we'd all like to have the opportunity to make $90 million. But what is the price tag that makes it worthwhile to be as publicly ridiculed as Chris Davis is getting right now? And then that gets back to what you were just saying about, you know, it's nasty on Twitter right now. I got to imagine going to sleep every night is hard, and getting up every morning and going to the ballpark is harder. And I'm with you. I feel for the guy. Like, it's not funny anymore. Who knows why when he signed the contract 4 years ago, he was an incredibly dangerous, productive hitter. And why it's fallen off the table so quickly, who knows? But I feel for the guy. I don't think he just walks away. Maybe they cut him loose. Maybe they buy him out. Maybe they make a deal with him and say, hey, we'll give you half and let's shake hands. I don't know. But it is tough to watch. Like, it's like watching, I don't know how you are, if you ever watch a comedian go up on stage and just bomb. Like, I can't look. I feel badly for the guy. This guy's going up on stage and bombing every single game. And it's April 9th. It's not like it's September 9th. So I'm with you. I feel sorry for the guy, and I hope something, whatever it is, I hope something changes to get him out of this daily spotlight that he's been in.
All right, we have a couple of minutes left. I did want to ask you about Virginia's win over Texas Tech, 85-77 overtime. Of course, I mean, we love redemption stories in sports, but man, this is the ultimate redemption story, isn't it? For the kids that were there last year when they went out, you just feel so good for them. Whether you're a huge Hoops fan or whether you've got any skin in the game when it comes to the two teams that were playing, that's just it's nice to see stuff like that happen, that it can still happen, you know?
I think so, on a number of levels, too. If you're, and I've done I don't know how many Virginia games over the last years, but if you like rooting for good people, these are good people. And so are Texas Tech. They're two programs who do it the right way. These are two programs you're never going to hear any rumors or innuendo about. Did they do this? Did they violate that? Like, they do it the right way. They don't get the five-star McDonald's All-American MVP recruits. They get good, solid three- and four-star players who, to forgive me for a cliche, play for the name on the front of the jersey, not for the name on the back. And as you said, last year was a one that lost to a 16. I mean, we talked about Chris Davis wearing it. Virginia wore it for months and months and months. And all through this remarkable regular season that they had again, everybody said, yeah, whatever, let's see what they do in March. Or, yeah, whatever, that style doesn't work in March. And clearly it does. Now, obviously, they won the last three games by the skin of their teeth, like they barely won them. But when you get down to playing teams as good as they were playing at the end, at Purdue and Auburn and Texas Tech, like, nobody's going to blow anybody out. And they're Listen, Kyle Guy hit huge shots. Ty Jerome made great plays. DeAndre Hunter made huge plays for them. And they just kept believing it. And I think Tony Bennett said it in his post-game interview last night. They have some sort of a phrase like, faith leads to victory. Like, they just kept believing in themselves. And they shut out all the outside noise and just stayed together. And it's a cool story. It feels like an old Sunday night movie of the week if it weren't real, right? But they did it. And I'm really happy for them.
Yeah, and you know, it was like, look, no disrespect to Duke or anything, but it was kind of neat watching. I got the sense I was watching two teams who'd been coached up a lot, right? And I know a lot of people look at Tony Bennett and they kind of, his system can be a little methodical, and I don't know if we're going to have a whole bunch of copycats as a result of that. But I got the impression I was watching a couple of teams that have been coached up, which I also like to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, part of coaching, I think, is, and this kind of gets back to what the Blue Jays are going through right now, is knowing what you are and knowing what you're not. And both of these teams really know what they are. They're smart, tough, defensive-minded teams. Last night, they both happened to hit a crazy number of shots for them. I thought this game was going to be in the 50s,
yeah,
and it was 68-68 going to overtime. So, but coaching is not just, hey, should I set a ball screen here, or should we pick and roll there? It's knowing who should do what, who shouldn't do what, and the mental toughness to just keep doing what you've been practicing for months and months and months and what you believe in, whether you're up 10 or down 10, you know, shutting out the noise, the 75,000 people. How would you like to have been Kyle Guy on the free throw line for three free throws in the semifinal game? Like, this is a 20-year-old kid. This isn't a 30-year-old grizzled veteran. These are kids. And yeah, both of these coaches are absolutely terrific. And you can't get the Zions and the RJs to go to Charlottesville and Lubbock. It doesn't work that way. Those kinds of kids are going to Duke or Kentucky or Kansas or Carolina or Michigan State, maybe, those kinds of plays. You've got to get kids who are good, can be coached, are going to stay 3 or 4 years and buy into what you're doing. And I think, you know, Chris Beard and Tony Bennett are certainly two of the best coaches in the college game. And Tony Bennett might be on his way to a Hall of Fame career if he can keep doing what he's doing over the next few years.